This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Ayatollah Khamenei says the U.S. intensified its Iranophobia and Shia phobia campaign only after Tehran frustrated all of its criminal schemes in other countries. Germany says its gas supply situation is tense and it can further deteriorate following Russia's decision to extend an outage of the Nord Stream 1 pipeline. Also ahead, Russia says the U.S. has refrained from issuing visas for its delegation to attend a U.N. General Assembly session later this month. Hello, welcome. This is News. Thanks for joining us. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says one of the reasons behind the enmity of arrogant powers toward Iran is that it encourages other nations to stand up against bullying tactics. Ayatollah Sayyid Khamenei said the U.S. is at the helm of a system of global arrogance. He said neutralizing America's criminal plots in different countries, such as the defeat of Daesh, led to widespread Iranophobia and Shiaphobia campaigns, as well as accusations that Iran is interfering in other countries' affairs. The leader emphasized that Iran does not interfere in other countries' internal affairs, noting that they make such accusations because they have failed in preventing the progress of the Islamic establishment. Ayatollah Khamenei said that arrogant powers mean to draw unrealistic lines in the Islamic world. The leader added that the U.S. policy is to instigate conflicts between Shias and Sunnis, Arabs and non-Arabs, or even provoke infighting within Shia and Sunni communities. Ayatollah Khamenei was addressing the participants at the 7th Congress of the Ahl al-Bayt World Assembly in Tehran. Iran's Quish Airlines has resumed flights to Afghanistan. Iranian and Afghan officials say this paves the way for closer economic cooperation between Iran and conflict-stricken Afghanistan. Our correspondent has a report from Kabul.
Iran's Quish airline is back to Afghanistan. Afghan and Iranian officials have welcomed this in a ceremony at Kabul's International Airport and stressed the importance of closer economic cooperation between the two countries.
We're happy today and welcome Air Quish Airline. We have very good relations with the Islamic Republic of Iran and do our best to expand cooperation in the political, economic and social fields.
This airway can be very helpful in the economic and cultural fields. I think such flights will soon be welcomed by other airlines as well, and that makes transportation between the two countries easier.
Iran has always tried to help boost Afghanistan's economy, and the resumption of Quish Air flights to Afghanistan can be considered another positive step in that regard.
Considering the changes that have taken place in Afghanistan since last year, the number of people coming from Afghanistan to Iran has risen, and that demand should be met. This is not enough, and we need to do more, and such activities are very effective in boosting economic relations between the two countries.
In recent months, Afghanistan has been deprived of many sources of international aid and even its own financial assets held in the United States. Now, Afghanistan's cooperation with Iran appears to be vital to the country's economic growth.
Such economic activities in cooperation with other neighboring countries promise the improvement of Afghanistan's economy by providing job and investment opportunities for people and for businessmen. Abdullah Amirzadeh, Kabul.
Moving on to Yemen. Yemen's oil ministry has held a press conference in the capital Sana'a to shed light on the looting of Yemeni crude oil by Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. Says that Riyadh and its allies continue to block Yemeni fuel ships and steal the country's oil, despite a UN brokered truce. Abdul Latif al-Washali reports.
Yemen is facing a fuel crisis as Saudi Arabia and its allies continue to block fuel ships in violation of a UN brokered truce and steal the country's crude oil. Yemen's Ministry of Oil has held a press conference in Sana'a to discuss the issue.
There are 13 oil basins in Yemen, of which only two are invested, namely Safar and Al Masila, at a rate of only 18%. These basins are located in Marib and Shabwa, and they are controlled by the Saudi-backed forces. They are continuously being looted, and this reflects negatively on the Yemeni economy. This systematic looting is one of the reasons for the years-long war against us by Saudi Arabia and its allies.
The ministry says the plundered oil is worth billions of dollars, which is enough to pay the suspended salaries of Yemeni employees. It held the Saudi-led coalition responsible for cutting off the salaries as the oil sales are being supplied to Saudi banks.
What the Saudi-led coalition is doing is the systematic looting of Yemeni oil and gas. The total amount that was looted from 2018 until July 2022 is about 130 million barrels, with a total value of about $9.5 billion. This money is enough to pay the Yemenis suspended salaries for 5 years. Unfortunately, they give the money from the plundered oil to the National Bank of Saudi Arabia and not the Central Bank of Yemen.
Yemen's petroleum company warned of an imminent fuel crisis as Riyadh is still preventing 9 fuel ships from entering the country, which is a clear violation of the UN brokered truce. However, the world body remains silent toward the Saudi violations. As Yemenis face a fuel crash due to the Saudi blockade, they are urging the United Nations to force Riyadh to fulfill its commitments under the ceasefire agreement and to stop detaining fuel ships headed to the country. They say pillaging Yemeni oil also reveals why the Saudi-led coalition launched a war on their country. Abdul Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
Germany bracing for further energy crunch as Russia extends the outage of gas supplies via the Nord Stream 1 pipeline. Germany's network regulator says the country's gas supply is guaranteed for now, but the situation is tense and could worsen. On Friday, Moscow said it scrapped a 72-hour deadline to resume flows via the pipeline, just hours before it was due to recommence deliveries. Moscow has cited a leakage of oil in one of the turbines for slashing the flow. Germany, however, says that the defects alleged by the Russian side are not a technical reason. In the meantime, the EU Economy Commissioner has noted that the bloc is ready for a full stop in gas deliveries from Russia. Paolo Gentiloni says the EU is well prepared to resist Russia's extreme use of the gas weapon. Moscow says the U.S. has so far refrained from issuing visas for the Russian delegation to attend a UN General Assembly session later this month. Russia's UN ambassador says none of the 56 Russian representatives have received entry visas to the U.S. as of Thursday. That includes Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, who is set to lead the delegation to the 77th session of the UN General Assembly. In a letter to the UN Secretary General, Vasily Nebenzia called the move by the U.S. alarming. He said visa issuance in Washington's legal duty and not a right or a privilege. According to a 1947 agreement, the U.S. is not allowed to prevent representatives of member states from traveling to the U.N. headquarters in New York. The U.S. State Department spokesperson has blamed the delay on forced termination of local and third country national staff at the U.S. Embassy in Russia. Italy's football league Serie A says that it will put a four-hour limit on the use of floodlights in stadiums on match days. It says that the measures aim to cut energy use as prices have gone up. That comes as the government in Rome is in talks to adopt energy-saving measures ahead of winter. Max Civelli has more.
On Thursday, Italy's outgoing government discussed an energy-saving plan during a council of ministers aimed to save up for this winter as part of efforts to reduce the country's dependency on Russian gas. Ecological Transition Minister Roberto Cingolani's plan includes limiting the use of heating in apartment blocks and public buildings. Italians will be demanded to turn down the central heating by 1 degree and turn it off for an hour at dusk every day starting in October. Italy is struggling with increased energy costs as wholesale gas prices have surged to historic levels across Europe since the start of the conflict in Ukraine.
Italy and a few other countries, including Belgium and the Czech Republic, are among those seeking an EU price cap on gas for power, but some members of the bloc, including France, are against this option. An emergency meeting of European Union energy ministers will be held in Brussels on September 9 to reach a consensus on tackling skyrocketing power costs.
We have a big gas problem. Our families and businesses are struggling, and politicians keep talking about making more debt to alleviate the crisis. But that would just be a patchwork. Italy must leave the TTF, the virtual trading point for natural gas based in the Netherlands, and then we can discuss a new LNG strategy.
Meanwhile, the Italian Confederation of Enterprises, Confcommercio, has warned some 120,000 Italian service sector firms could go out of business over the next 10 months.
I costi dell'energia sono ormai la vera emergenza.
The rise of energy costs is the real emergency. Service sector firms will spend a total of 33 billion euros on energy bills, three times as much as in 2021. The government must speed up the procedures to access the funds of the EU Energy Recovery Fund and to make sure that the price cap on gas for power is adopted.
If energy costs keep rising at the current pace, Confcommercio, which has estimated that 370,000 jobs are at risk, is calling on the government to extend tax relief and to mandate that bills can be paid in smaller installments. The bad news for Italy doesn't stop there. Inflation jumped to 9% in August from 8.4% the month before. Financial analysts expect inflation to grow further, reaching 10% in October. Max Civili, Rome.
The G7 group has agreed to impose a price cap on Russian oil imports. Moscow says the move would lead to a shortage in global oil markets and rocketing prices for European consumers. Russia has also warned to retaliate by banning oil exports to countries imposing the restriction. The U.S. and Europe have been pushing for the move for months while facing soaring energy prices and inflation. So will this punitive measure against Russia prove to be effective? And most importantly, won't this destabilize the global economy even further?
The G7 countries have agreed to implement a price cap on Russian imports, despite warnings from the Kremlin to halt sales to countries imposing the restriction. Finance ministers of the United States, Japan, Canada, Germany, France, Italy, and the United Kingdom agreed on a plan to ban the provisions of services that enable maritime transportation of Russian-origin crude oil and petroleum products globally. This means importers seeking shipping services and insurance cover from companies based in G7 and EU countries would need to adhere to a price cap to transport Russian oil. The level of the cap is still being discussed. The German finance minister has stated the purpose of the move as such.
We want to limit Russia's revenues and at the same time reduce economic damage to our societies. This price cap on Russian oil exports is designed to reduce Putin's revenues.
The cap is expected to take effect at the same time as the next EU embargoes on Russian oil in early December. Moscow has warned that it will retaliate by banning oil exports to countries that implement the restriction. The Kremlin has warned that a price ceiling will significantly destabilize the oil markets, resulting in scarcity in global oil markets and soaring prices for European consumers. The ban is part of a range of measures taken by the West targeting Russia for the war in Ukraine. In response to the war, the U.S. decided to prohibit the import of oil, refined petroleum products, natural gas, and coal from Russia. These restrictions on Russian energy imports have contributed to higher gas prices and increased inflation pressure across the U.S. Washington's European allies are in no better condition. The European countries have plunged into a devastating energy crisis. Consumers are facing huge bills and the highest rates of inflation since the 1980s. Shell's chief executive officer has earlier warned that gas shortages could persist for several years, raising the prospect of continued energy rationing.
Well, in terms of the way that this has happened, the relationship between the West and Russia, first of all, has gotten worse. But the G7 is trying to stop the export of Russian oil purchased above a certain price. Well, for that to work, the group needs to get non-member states involved. In the meantime, Moscow has countered the EU and U.S. sanctions to limit its oil sales by boosting exports to countries like India and China. Moscow has also shut off the EU's Nord Stream gas supply. How far will this war over energy continue?
Russian energy giant Gazprom has halted flows via the crucial Nord Stream 1 pipeline to Europe. The company cited an oil leak and didn't give a timeline of when the shipments might resume. This comes in the wake of the G7 countries' decision to impose a price cap on Russian oil. The continued shutdown of the pipeline could exacerbate the energy crisis in Europe, as it is the biggest pipeline for gas from Russia, accounting for about 35% of Europe's total Russian gas imports last year. Russia had already threatened to retaliate by banning oil exports to countries that implement a price cap. Since June, Gazprom has slashed flows through Nord Stream 1 to just 20% of its capacity, citing maintenance issues as a dispute over a missing turbine caught up in Western export sanctions. It has also cut off supplies to several unfriendly European countries and energy companies over their refusal to pay for gas in rubles. The West has already sanctioned many Russian energy exports, but Moscow has continued to earn billions of dollars a month by diverting oil to countries such as China and India. China's crude imports from Russia soared to a record level in May, ousting Saudi Arabia as the country's top supplier.
The prices that are being paid for Russian oil are far higher than the cost of actually extracting that oil. So what the Russians are taking advantage, in other words, of the situation they're imposing by their boycotts and by the war in Ukraine.
The West is trying to sever the Kremlin's revenues by imposing a ceiling for Russian exports. But Moscow has proved that it can reduce the exporting of its products to Europe and still have mass revenues.
And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. Donald Trump's coup attempt at the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, got him banned from Twitter, which forced the former president to start his own social media company called Truth Social. And the U.S. Department of Justice must be incredibly thankful that Trump still has a way to talk directly with the public, since the 45th president appeared to admit to at least one serious crime on Truth Social on Wednesday night, 31st of August. The article you're about to hear has been written by journalist Matt Novak, writing for the website Gizmodo.com. The piece is titled "Donald Trump Accidentally Admits to Crime in New Truth Social Post." Please stay with us for more of Matt Novak's article. Donald Trump's coup attempt at the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, got him banned from Twitter, which forced the former president to start his own social media company called Truth Social. And the U.S. Department of Justice must be incredibly thankful that Donald Trump still has a way to talk directly with the American public, since the 45th president appeared to admit to at least one serious crime on Truth Social on Wednesday night, 31st of August. Trump's home in Florida was famously raided on Monday, 8th of August, after the Department of Justice and National Archives asked the former president for any classified documents he took from the White House, but only received a handful back. And late on Tuesday, a new court filing in the case included a photograph showing many of the highly classified documents the FBI found Donald Trump was illegally holding at Mar-a-Lago. Donald Trump tried to defend himself over the incident on Wednesday, 31st of August, sending out various messages on Truth Social that he apparently thought would exonerate him. But one message in particular contradicted his own legal team's court filings and seemed to be an admission of guilt for various crimes, including violation of the Presidential Records Act and also obstruction of justice. Donald Trump's post on Truth Social on Wednesday night, 31st of August, read as follows. There seems to be confusion as to the picture where documents were sloppily thrown on the floor and then released photographically for the world to see, as if that's what the FBI found when they broke into my home. Wrong. They took them out of cartons and spread them around under carpet, making it look like a big find for them. They dropped them, not me. Very deceiving. And remember, we could have no representative, including lawyers, present during the raid on Mar-a-Lago. They were told to wait outside. But why could this social media message be a huge problem for Trump? To start off with, it's a rather a blunt acknowledgement that Donald Trump not only knew he had classified documents in his possession in violation of the Presidential Records Act of 1978, but that he also knew where they were and how they were stored. And several lawyers made this point on Twitter. Trump now whines that the documents weren't on the floor like that. They took them out of cartons, he said. How does he know where they were stored? Asked Tristan Snell, a lawyer who previously worked prosecuting Trump's fraudulent Trump University when he was with the New York Attorney General's office. If Donald Trump knew he still had classified documents, that would be at odds with a sworn statement from Trump's legal team that everything had already been handed over. The name of Trump's legal representative who swore to that claim is redacted in the court filing. The government's court filing also said that classified documents were likely concealed and that efforts were likely taken to obstruct the government's investigation. And Donald Trump never even bothered to argue against that point. The other thing about Trump's new Truth Social post makes clear is that these documents couldn't have been planted by the FBI, an allegation that has been made repeatedly by Trump supporters on Fox News Channel and on Newsmax and elsewhere. The idea that documents could have been planted isn't impossible, as we've seen plenty of videos showing police officers planting drugs in recent years, thanks to the advent of body cameras. But let's take the drug analogy further. Imagine Trump had been accused of holding heroin at Mar-a-Lago. Replace the word documents with heroin needles, and you can see that Trump is admitting he knew exactly where they were and how they were organized. There seems to be confusion as to the picture where heroin needles were sloppily thrown on the floor and then released photographically for the world to see, as if that's what the FBI found when they broke into my home. Wrong. They took them out of cartons and spread them around on the carpet, making it look like a big find for them. They dropped them, not me. Very deceiving. The problem for Trump becomes much more clear now, as anyone with a little bit of common sense can see. The other crime that Donald Trump could potentially be charged with is violating the Espionage Act. It's entirely possible that Trump was showing these documents to visitors at Mar-a-Lago, or in a more nefarious possibility, selling the documents to foreign governments. There's already evidence that Trump's son-in-law received $2 billion from the Saudi government, and no one really knows what the Saudis got in return for their cash. It certainly wasn't a smart investment, according to just about everyone involved. But Trump's lawyers don't seem too concerned with charges of espionage. In fact, they're calling the law mundane. They say themselves in these papers that they filed that this is under the Presidential Records Act, Trump lawyer Alina Haba said on Charlie Kirk's podcast on Wednesday, according to the Daily Beast. So what they did was try to criminalize Donald Trump as they always do. They found these three mundane statutes, espionage and the other two, obstruction of justice. And they're trying to claim there is some sort of criminal activity, Alina Haba said. Another defense of Donald Trump's actions has been that he declassified all of these documents, but it's unlikely that will hold up in a court of law. For one thing, the president can declassify almost any document that he wants, but not some of the most closely held nuclear secrets. And there have been reports from the start that at least some of these Mar-a-Lago documents held nuclear secrets. But even if you want to believe that Donald Trump somehow declassified these in his head, as some of his lawyers have tried to argue, that's not how it works. The president has to declare documents declassified, and then they get marked with a line striking through the top secret notation on each page. Anyone who's received formally classified documents through the Freedom of Information Act is familiar with what this looks like. None of the documents in the photograph taken by the FBI at Mar-a-Lago show markings that indicate anything there was declassified. There was a reasonable argument that Donald Trump needed to get booted from Twitter because of his neo-fascist language to supporters was a threat to the safety and security of the United States. But at this point, Trump's social media activity could reasonably force the hand of a Department of Justice that's clearly uneasy about making the unprecedented move of charging a former president with a crime.
The ocean of dua.
Al-Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam ziyaratan minni wa niyabatan an walidai.
did you leave us to fend for ourselves? Jose, Jose, the slain.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Madarisi, and in this edition of The Ocean of Dua, we are trying to discuss and talk about the different aspects of Ziyarat Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, Ziyarat al-Ashura. So stay with us. Brothers and sisters, we were discussing this part of Ziyarat al-Ashura. وَلَعَنَ اللَّهُ آلَ زِيَادٍ وَآلَ مَرْوَانٍ. May Allah distance from His mercy the clan of Ziyad and the clan of Marwan. We discussed the true meaning of la'n, also the true definition of the word al, and how and why we have translated it into clan of and tribe. And we started introducing Ziyad and Marwan in order to get to know their al and their tribe and clan. In the previous episode, we discussed Ziyad ibn Abi. We said that based on historical records, Ziyad is the product of Sumayya, a slave girl who worked during the Age of Ignorance. He was born in the house of Ubaid, and he was called Ziyad ibn Ubaid. And thereafter, Muawiyah attached him to himself as a brother. When the empire of Umayyah fell, he came to be known as Ziyad ibn Abihi, which means Ziyad, the son of his father, and also Ziyad ibn Sumayyah, and his technonym was Abu al-Mughayrah. This action of Muawiyah, attaching Ziyad to himself, was clearly contrary to the Islamic law, because the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam had said, "Al-waladu lil-firash walil-ahiri al-hajar." The born child belongs to the bed where it was conceived, and the adulterer must be deprived. So, since Sumayya conceived Ziyad while she was the wife of Ubaid, it was legally incorrect of Muawiyah to attach Ziyad to Abu Sufyan and consider him as his brother. According to the Islamic laws, Ziyad should be taken as the child of Ubaid, and Abu Sufyan has no relationship to him whatsoever. Imam Hassan alayhi salam, addressing Ziyad in the presence of Muawiyah, is reported to have said, "Wama anta ya Ziyad wa Quraysha?" O Ziyad, what relation do you have with Quraysh? لا أعرف لك فيها أديما صحيحا ولا فرعا نابتا. I do not know that you have with them a legal origin, a growing branch. ولا قديما ثابتا ولا منبتا كريما. I do not know that you have with them a firm step or a noble source. And Imam continues, بل كانت أمك بغيا تداولها رجال قريش وفجار العرب فلما ولدت لم تعرف لك العرب والدا فادعاك هذا. And this is really interesting. Imam tells him, your father was unknown, فادعاك هذا. Muawiyah was present at that time in that gathering. And Imam says that thereafter this one, pointing to Muawiyah, he claimed you as his brother after the death of his father. So Imam tells him, you have no pride. Sufficient for you is Sumayya, and sufficient for us is Allah's apostle and my father, Ali ibn Abi Talib, the doyen of the believers.
When people ask, I'm confused about which school is right or which madhab is right, go to Karbala. Look at Karbala, it clarifies it instantaneously. Anybody says, I'm confused, say, please go to Karbala and tell me what happened, why it happened, and what does it have to do with your religion. you will see it completely exemplifies. It clarifies. It takes all the blurs out instantaneously. SubhanAllah, that's the miracle of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's main foundation of morality is do not allow tyranny. Do not allow evil doing. Do not allow indecency. Why is Imam like this? Because he knows Allah. He appreciates Him. He understands His dimensions. That's why we must love them so much. We must love them so much that don't let anybody else take us away from them. There should be no room in our thoughts. No matter who we admire in this world, no matter how great a person we look at, never move the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt out of the center of the heart. Never. They will know that their Khalifa lied to them because he told them they don't pray. And if they see them praying on the battlefield, their hearts will change. So stop them from praying. Imagine how evil these people were. That's how much lies they had. And you cannot eradicate this lie at the level that we are talking about unless you give your blood for the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
So, this Ziyad was known to be one of the tyrants who committed so many atrocities against the lovers and followers of Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam during his lifetime. In the beginning, Imam Ali alayhi as-salam, during his caliphate, chose him as his governor in Fars, and he was warned by Imam alayhi as-salam to beware of the deception of Muawiyah. But it seems he took things pretty lightly. Afterwards, he was subdued by the guile of Muawiyah, and he was overturned in his loyalty to Imam Ali alayhi salam. Muawiyah placed him as his governor in Kufa and Basra, where he began slaying and torturing the companions of Amir al-Mu'mineen, the commander of the believers, Imam Ali alayhi salam. History records that he killed 100,000 Shias of Imam Ali alayhi salam. In a letter to Muawiyah, Imam Hussein alayhi salam enumerates some of his atrocities and says, Imam tells Muawiyah, ثُمَّ سَلَّطَهُ عَلَى الْعِرَاقَيْنِ فَقَتَعَ أَيْدِ الْمُسْلِمِينَ. Thereafter you made him, Imam is referring to Ziyad, you made him dominate al-Iraqayn, Imam says, Kufa and Basra, and he severed the hands of faithful. Imam continues, he crucified them under trunks of date palms. It is as if you are not from this Islamic nation, and the nation is alien to you. أَوَلَسْتَ صَاحِبُ الْحَضْرَمِيِّينَ الَّذِينَ كَتَبَ إِلَيْكَ إِبْنُ سُمَيَّةَ أَنَّهُمْ عَلَى دِينِ عَلِيٍّ. Were you not responsible for the Hadhramis from Yemen, about whom the son of Sumayyah wrote to you, and he said that they are the followers of religion of Ali ibn Abi Talib, and you wrote to him back and told him to kill whosoever is in the religion and opinion of Ali alayhi salam. This, dear listeners, is only a part of what Imam Hussein alayhi salam says to Muawiyah in a letter. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
أنت الذي صنعت من الرمح منبرا ظمآن والزمان بعينيك ممطرا نعم الأمير أنت حسين وقدوتي ساروا إليك قلبي وعقلي ودمعتي يا محيي الكرامة تبكيك كل عين لبيك يا إمامي لبيك يا حسين الروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين.
دم لبيك يا حسين
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The limelight.
The latest legal developments around Trump once again highlight the fact that the U.S. still suffers from serious internal frictions. Please stay with us for an article in this regard written by the staff of Crescent International. This article is published under the heading, Trump is back on stage. Where will he take America? Here's the story. Donald Trump is back at the center of America's corrupt political landscape. If he were a Venezuelan or Iranian politician, the Western corporate media would probably frame him as a pro-free market dissident being persecuted by the country. Despite losing in the last election, millions of Americans still take Trump seriously. He's seen as some sort of an anti-establishment crusader. This itself is a telling reflection of the anti-intellectual tradition of American society. When Trump was selected president in 2016, his adversaries were irritated by the damage he would do and did to the image of the United States of America. People with the ability to analyze events properly clearly understood that Trump is America. As Dr. Joseph Massad explained in his column for the Middle East Eye, what accounts for Trump's achievement is his sincere commitment to the restoration of an unabashed, unapologetic U.S. white supremacy and runaway capitalism that easily withstands the wishy-washiness of U.S. liberalism and its continued commitment to white supremacy with a human face, whether a white one or in blackface. We'll be right back. In November 2020, Crescent International wrote that post-election, Trump will be as big a problem, if not bigger, to the U.S. political system than he is now. For 4 years, an ignoramus like Trump had access to the darkest secrets of the deep state. It would not be surprising to learn if Trump had photocopied some of the secret documents to use in his forthcoming memoirs that naturally will be written for him. So will the most recent legal saga propel Trump back into the White House? It is a possibility, although at present it seems remote. However, what recent developments will do is that they will seal Trump's position within the Republican political establishment as a kingmaker and key influencer. No Republican candidate will be able to participate in national U.S. politics without some form of appeasement of Trump's capricious policies. The person who mainstreamed the term fake news is going to continuously faking to be a serious public figure. Anyone who questions this will be labeled as fake news disturber, and there is very little the Americans can do about it. In the dominant postmodernist mindset, truth is relative. This is what happens when informal logic and philosophy no longer play key roles in the educational system. The real internal political crisis will emerge once the right-wing spectrum of the American political establishment realizes that their real presidential candidate is still the most buffoonish character on the scene. Even if Trump does not run for president in 2024 but manages to get a Republican back into the White House, that person will owe Trump some favors. Such a scenario is quite probable. Besides, Trump will not be subtle about those favors. The latest legal developments around Trump once again highlight the fact that the U.S. still suffers from serious internal frictions. This would not be a big problem if Washington were not simultaneously involved in a global geopolitical standoff with Russia and China. The combination of these factors is another major step towards ending America's global hegemony.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, community environment. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the community environment in the Islamic lifestyle. What we mean with the community environment is that the community is the part of everyone's life. We generally look at our individual life, but we ignore our social aspect of the life. And we see that there are many things that are happening in the community which must be dealt properly and which must be looked after. But we never pay attention towards that. And in result of that, we see mishappening and injustice, we see oppression, we see corruption in the society. And this is all because we never pay attention towards the community environment, to the social environment, to the society in which we are living. And therefore, Islam pays emphasis on this aspect, that we must pay attention to the community in which we are living. As far as we are giving attention, we are attentive to our individual life, we must pay attention towards the society, towards the community, because both of them are individual life and the community or the society, they both are the part of each other. So therefore, when we want to have a good lifestyle, especially an Islamic lifestyle, it is necessary to look after both aspects, the aspect of my individual life and the aspect of the society in which I'm living or the community in which I am living. Therefore, I need to pay attention towards the community environment in order to have a good community around me. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of the community environment in the Islamic lifestyle. We said it is necessary to pay attention towards the community as well as to the individual life. And because we are ignoring our community environment around us, therefore we see corruption, we see injustice, we see oppression in the society. There is a very beautiful hadith, and which has been narrated by the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam, and he is trying to explain the life, the community life, and the individual life in this example. He says, imagine a person who is sinful. A sinful person in the community is just like a person who basically board on a boat and they are traveling. And when they reach to the middle of the river, if that person, he stands up and he picks up an axe and starts holding the place where he was sitting, and if others who are on the board, if they do not stop him, then obviously the water will sink the whole boat. And even if he answers, like if you want to stop him, even if he says that I'm making a hole in my own seat or the place where I have or I paid rent for it, but still we cannot allow him to do so. Why? Because he is one person, but his action will sink the whole people or the whole community who is on board on that boat. Therefore, it is necessary to stop people in the community from committing sins, and this is our responsibility. Therefore, we must call towards the goodness and stop people from performing evil, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Just listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.